Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. So good to have you with us. I hope you had a nice weekend. Coming up next hour, we'll focus on COVID-19 and the huge outbreak we're dealing with here in Southern California. Dr. Dean Blumberg of UC Davis will be with us to talk about the very latest, the continued rollout of the coronavirus vaccine, as well as concerns about one of the tests that's been heavily used at Los Angeles area testing centers. But we do have some news just breaking right now. The Associated Press is reporting that it has gotten the first look at the theme for President-elect Joe Biden's inauguration. That theme will be America United. That, of course, an issue that's been a central focus for Joe Biden, taking on added weight, of course, after the attack of the U.S. Capitol last Wednesday. The Presidential Inaugural Committee said the theme reflects the beginning of a new national journey that restores the soul of America, brings the country together, and creates a path to a brighter future. The committee also announced, after he's officially inaugurated, the incoming president, Vice President-elect Harris, and their spouses will lay a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier in Arlington National Cemetery. They'll be joined there by former presidents Barack Obama, George W. Bush, Bill Clinton, and their wives. It'll be one of Biden's first acts as president and a show of bipartisanship at a time when, of course, we're in a deep national divide. Joining us for the very latest developments to expand on what we just heard on NPR Hourly News is White House correspondent and associate editor for Politico, Anita Kumar. Anita, thank you for being with us again today.
Sure. Thanks for having me back.
So we just heard that a couple of hours ago or so, GOP members of the House blocked a resolution which would have demanded that the vice president invoke the 25th Amendment to remove the president from office. But they're going to vote on that tomorrow. So can you explain a little bit about that procedure?
Yeah, I mean, really, there's been two tracks on this that Nancy Pelosi and the House Democrats have gone through. You know, one is the one that you're talking about, and I don't think that anyone expected that to go very far for a couple reasons. One, you just mentioned that House Republicans don't want to go down that road, having the, you know, invoking the 25th Amendment. But also, remember, the vice president and cabinet members have to go along with that, too. That's a tough one. But of course, they have, as of today now, they are having an article of impeachment and they're trying to get signatures for that or people to sign on. And as of just a few minutes ago, they have gotten at least enough Democrats to sign on to move forward with that. So that does look like that's the path that they're going to go on. And we're going to see them probably vote later this week. They needed, you know, at least 218 Democrats have now signed on to the impeachment resolution.
Anita, do they need to actually call witnesses, or is this something where members of the House can just lay out their case and this article of impeachment that's being introduced today of the president inciting insurrection? Can this just be laid out by members of the House and then voted on, or anything more than that?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, if you remember a year plus ago where they had the other article of impeachment, articles of impeachment, I should say, it went through a committee process. So the committee voted and debated and then it went to the floor. This is not going to happen like that. They want to, you know, we're a week out from the president's term ending. They're in a hurry. So what they're looking at is this one single article of impeachment that they're looking at. They're finalizing that, and they would want people to vote on that. So it would be very quick. Now, what wouldn't be quick is a talk, and it's not definite yet, that they would vote, impeach him. But then the second part of that, of course, is the trial phase, which is in the Senate. And they would hold on to this in the House and maybe not send it over to the Senate. As soon as it goes over to the Senate, they should have a trial. And they don't want, you know, they don't want to make that part of Joe Biden's beginning of his term. And so if they hold on to it for 100 days, it would be after President Trump leaves office, which there's some people saying, well, what's the point of doing that, right? But I think that House Democrats realize it's not likely that President Trump is going to, that they are going to remove him from office in the next eight or so days. It's just not likely. So it still sends that message that what they think what he did was wrong and that he should be held accountable. That's the word I keep hearing over and over again, even if he's actually not removed.
We're talking with Anita Kumar of Politico, sharing with us the latest of what's going on in the House of Representatives. So it sounds like, as a practical matter, they could hypothetically vote to impeach on Wednesday, and then that's pretty much the end of it until Inauguration Day.
Yeah, that's right. Right now, the Senate, which, of course, is Republican-controlled still, is scheduled to come back on January 19th. So that's right the day before the inauguration. There are ways for them to come back early, but it sounds like the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell does not think that is going to happen. So if they do come back on January 19th, it's clear they're not going to have a trial in a day. A trial has to be like a trial. It has to be, you know, where evidence is presented and then the president's team could defend him. And that certainly couldn't happen in a day, and that certainly wouldn't happen before January 20th. So I think that, you know, Democrats in the House are well aware of that and still moving ahead, but knowing that that trial wouldn't happen before January 20th.
Anita, as we understand, the investigation into the attack on the U.S. Capitol is quite wide-ranging at this point. And there have been a number of social media posts that were very explicit as to the effort to try and breach the security inside the Capitol building, such thing as taking zip ties and you know, attacking members of Congress, that this was reportedly out there, and nevertheless, the Capitol Police were not prepared for the kind of insurrection that occurred last Wednesday. So I know we've had some resignations, but you know, at this point, what's planned to deal with any potential violence between now and Inauguration Day?
Well, there's the between now and Inauguration Day, and then there's Inauguration Day itself. And there's some people concerned about that, and that's being revisited. And last I heard, President-elect Biden is still planning on being sworn in there at outside the Capitol. So I don't think that's changed, but they are sort of revisiting how that would look and who can be there. What you did see was the District of Columbia mayor saying that she's declaring a state of emergency, which basically would limit who could be out and about between now and Inauguration Day. So that's both to help on Inauguration Day, but also the days in between, because we are seeing that people are talking about coming on Inauguration Day or even before to protest again. And I think there's a lot of concern about that. I can't overstate that how upset members of Congress were, that they felt so unsafe and so disappointed that people could come in and, you know, basically threaten them and their staff and other people that happen to be in the building. So I just think that they're very concerned about what that's going to look like. A lot of them were concerned before, you know, the day of the protest last week, and they were told by Capitol Police, we've got this under control, and they clearly didn't. So there's not a level of trust there. And as you mentioned, there's the Capitol Police chief is leaving. Both the sergeant at arms in the Senate and the House are leaving. So you're going to have acting people in charge. And these days are, the inauguration and other protests are coming up very quickly. So they feel like they need to make some changes before then.
Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said that, you know, half of the House could have been lost in this attack, that there could have been hundreds of deaths. And I'm just wondering, from, you know, what the conversations that you had, is this a widely held sense within the House of Representatives that that they were potentially close to a catastrophic event?
Several members of Congress have said that, and I've also heard from staffers that were in the building, and as well as journalists. Some of my colleagues were there, and they all felt like if the protesters, or whatever we want to call them at this point, had been more organized, perhaps it could have been worse. I mean, that they didn't succeed was more of a fluke than, the police really, fighting back. And they feel like well, if they could have done it that time, what's to say they can't do it again? And so there's a really, you know, some concern about that. I would definitely say that's the case.
Anita, thank you so much. We appreciate it. We'll let you go. And as always, thank you for giving us the latest on what's happening in D.C.
Sure. Thank you.
From Politico, Anita Kumar, White House correspondent and associate editor. I want to find out how California's Republican Congress members are responding to the attack on the Capitol on Wednesday, and whether they've come out and made strong statements denouncing the rhetoric at the event before the attack on the Capitol, as well as the attack, of course, itself. And KPECC politics reporter Libby Dankman has been very active on calling our local Congress members' offices to try and get their response. Libby, good morning.
Good morning, Larry.
So why don't you take us through the range of responses we've had so far?
Sure. So first of all, seven Republican members from California voted to challenge the Electoral College count on Wednesday, even after the events that the some are calling a riot, some are calling an insurrection. The people who breached the actual Capitol grounds and caused destruction and in some cases death. Even after that occurred, seven of the members from California did vote to challenge the election results in Pennsylvania and Arizona. And they are universally condemning violence. They say that, you know, nothing related to what happened on Wednesday is acceptable. Kevin McCarthy, the minority leader in the House, released a statement that said, you know, violence, destruction, and chaos that unfolded in the Capitol on Wednesday was unacceptable, undemocratic, and un-American. However, he and six of his colleagues still said that they felt that there were enough, quote, irregularities in the election in these key swing states, as well as potentially what they call violations of the law in terms of the legislature being circumvented when election law was changed. Now, all of that has been litigated in court by members of the president's legal team, by members of Congress who joined that Texas lawsuit that was attempting to overthrow several of the elections in key swing states. All of that has been litigated and almost universally thrown out, or you know, something that the Supreme Court decided to not take up. However, they say that, you know, there needs to be reforms going forward when it comes to, you know, people file double voting and things like that. Things that, you know, almost universally people say are problems with election, with voter rolls being cleaned up, things like that, that maybe have very tiny effects in terms of, you know, votes being cast illegally, but are certainly not enough to affect the outcome of these big swing states. When you talk about, you know, 80,000 plus votes being the difference in Pennsylvania, that's what we're hearing from Republicans who voted to uphold the challenge. They condemn the violence, but they say they really want to see reforms going forward, Larry, in how these elections are conducted.
We're talking with KPECC and LAist politics reporter Libby Dankman, joining us on Air Talk with the latest on the California Republican delegation and their members' response. I was particularly curious about this because we now have incoming members of Congress from purple districts who are Republicans. And, you know, they've got a very divided electorate that they represent. And so I'm just curious how they take a stance versus President Trump, given, you know, the negative image of the president in the overwhelming majority of California congressional districts.
You know, I think it's interesting to take the case of, for example, Young Kim in the 39th district, who narrowly defeated Gil Cisneros, the incumbent Democrat who had flipped that district to the Democratic column in 2018. Young Kim released a statement ahead of the January 6th vote last Wednesday that said Congress simply has no role here, that the electors in each state have been certified. States have the ability to send electors and certify their process. process that happened within the states, and Congress taking over would be unconstitutional. That's a similar statement that we saw from, say, David Valadao, who also won a narrow election, flipping the 21st district in the Central Valley back. Even Tom McClintock in Northern California, who is not considered a centrist by most accounts. Yeah. Tom McClintock also agreed in terms of Young Kim's constitutional reading that Congress simply had no role on the 6th. And the messaging that we were hearing from many members of Congress and the president was really lying to people in terms of the ability of the vice president and of Congress to stop the certification of the election at that point. Now, when you turn to the 25th district, Mike Garcia, also a new member of Congress, he was elected in a special election, but then reelected in November 2020, that district that used to be Katie Hill's district in Northern LA County. He released a statement ahead of the vote saying that he believed, again, that there were irregularities in the election and that some reforms were needed, and that he would vote to contest some of the Electoral College votes in key swing states. He also condemned violence once that riot occurred at the Capitol and the violence that occurred. But he did go ahead with the vote to challenge. And if you remember, Larry, that district was only won by Republicans by 333 votes. And so it is a deeply purple district, yeah, even more so than the Orange County races. And you definitely see Mike Garcia taking a stand that many of his constituents who also voted for Joe Biden might disagree with. Now, in the days following that, most of the Republicans who did vote to uphold the challenge on Wednesday have also said, okay, we're done now. We are saying that Joe Biden is the president-elect. We need to have a peaceful transition of power. So really, despite voting for the challenge, they are saying that, you know, that was a statement that they had to make, but they would like to move on and have a peaceful transition now.
KPCC Politics reporter Libby Denkman with us. Michigan just banned the open carry of guns inside its state capitol, that following the attack on the U.S. Capitol last Wednesday. Again, Michigan banning the open carry of guns inside its state capitol. Last year, Libby, of course, we had that very dramatic footage of a group of people going inside the Michigan State Capitol building heavily armed.
You know, I think that there were many events that were harbingers of what happened on Wednesday, Larry, and things that, as your previous guest said, and many have said, you know, were clear signs that violence was brewing when the rhetoric was continuing to claim that the president had an election stolen from him and that the, people who supported him had their votes stolen from them because what we know is a legal process was moving forward. We saw signs that this was something that could happen. And, you know, I think a lot of people saying that they were surprised by the violence maybe had not checked in on several of the social media platforms or, in some of the more extremist conversations that, have been out there for a long time.
Or just attributed it to the kind of disturbing postings that we've been seeing for a very long time on social media, and so saying, well, that's what people do, you know, online or on social media, doesn't necessarily mean they're going to act on it. And then, of course, we had the terrible event of last Wednesday with people acting on that. We'll continue with Libby Denkman. We're at 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. We'll be back in just 1 minute. Pulitzer Prize winners Gary Wills, Ron Chernow, John Meacham, and Stacy Schiff are among hundreds of historians who have signed an open letter calling for President Trump to be removed from office after last week's siege of the U.S. Capitol. The letter reads, by fomenting violence against the Congress and seeking to subvert constitutional democracy, which resulted in the killing of a Capitol Police officer and the deaths of several rioters, Trump has violated his oath of office to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. The letter goes on to say he is a clear and present danger to American democracy and the national security of the United States. The letter's principal drafters were Sean Wilentz, Sidney Blumenthal, and David Greenberg. Others endorsing it include a frequent guest we've had on Air Talk, Douglas Brinkley, David Blight, Mary Beth Norton, Rick Atkinson, Diane McWhorter, and Rick Perlstein. Those are a few. But again, the letter written by the historians and posted online today includes hundreds of signatures. We're talking with KPECC reporter Libby Dankman, talking about how local members of Congress responded to the attack on the U.S. Capitol last Wednesday. Libby, I'm wondering about the impeachment effort, because Congressman Ted Lieu of the South Bay coastal swath of Los Angeles County, he's one of the introducers of a resolution for impeachment. Is that the one that's being taken up?
Yes. So he is one of the three co-authors of that, and he has been talking about it. He did an op-ed in the LA Times and also on Twitter about the need to impeach the president, both to send, you know, a message and also to try to inhibit any future dangerous activity that the president might get up to in the next 10 days or so that he has in office. And, you know, this is not going to be a hard vote for Democrats, of course, in the delegation. They will mostly line up with Speaker Pelosi and the members who drafted this resolution. I think the choice, you know, that's really going to be interesting is to see if any Republicans in the House join this decision to try to remove the president from office. Obviously, it's not going to reach the threshold to actually remove in the Senate to convict and remove. But in the House, if this these acts of January 6th last week will convince any members from California to agree that the president has acted in a way that is requiring of removal from office, I don't see that occurring. I see Kevin McCarthy and others talking about unity and talking about moving forward. But of course, you have members on the Democratic side saying we can't move forward until there's accountability.
Were you surprised that Mike Garcia, the Republican representing Santa Clarita, what had been Katie Hill's district, came out challenging the Electoral College count in those several states, given the district that he's in? I've say for myself, I'm surprised, because it would seem like, you know, the ads against him in 2 years would almost write themselves with the footage of the attack on the Capitol and, you know, people putting the challenge together with that.
I think that there is a calculation that some members are doing, that the people with the longest memories are the people who are extremely motivated by this extreme and misleading rhetoric that is in the Trumposphere, the internet forums that and social media platforms that support the president's claims that he has had the election stolen. And despite all the states certifying, despite all the legal challenges being declined, that he is somehow in the been wronged here. I think that the members like Mike Garcia, again, 333 votes was the margin that he won that election in November by, you know, believe that the groups of people who are very convinced by this online rhetoric are the most important people to be talking to right now. And I just don't know if that's the case, especially in these purple districts that mostly voted for Biden. And again, like you said, this will be a message that comes back certainly in 2 years.
Libby, thank you so much. We really appreciate your being with us this morning and sharing all the digging you've been doing with the local Congress members about their reaction to the insurrection last week at the Capitol. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Larry.
KPECC and LAist politics reporter Libby Dankman with us on 89.3 KPECC.